everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. For those of you who are actually listening live, and I know a lot more of you listen later, but if you are out there and you're listening live, I invite you to chat with me today, if you would like. I am here talking about 21st century products today that are plant-based. There's so many coming out in the world, and I wanted to discuss a bunch of them. And so if you have any comments and questions, you can email me at info@realmeals.org, or you can call in to the show and ask a question. Meanwhile, let's talk about 21st century plant-based products. So one of the things that got me thinking about this was about a week and a half ago here in New York City at the Jacob Javits Convention Center. There was the Plant-Based World Conference and Expo. Had you heard about it? Did you go? Unfortunately, I was in Houston, so I missed it. But I heard a lot of buzz about it, and a lot of people were very excited about it. The most exciting thing, I think, is the fact that plant-based products, plant-based foods, vegan foods are on the map. We're going mainstream, we're on the map, and investors are starting to see return on their investments if they invest in these products, and more people are looking to invest in these products. And in a capitalistic world, that's a good thing. I'm not saying I promote capitalism, but it's one way to make things work. If you can show that your product can save money or can make money, because it's not only just about food, it's about money, right? So at this plant-based world, there were speakers and panels and lots of products. And you can go to their website, plantbasedworldexpo.com, and see some of the exhibitors that were there. Maybe you know about some of these products, maybe you don't. But in case you didn't know, we can make just about everything today from plants. Almost. And the question is, do people want these products? Some of us do. For example, the plant-based cheeses that are coming out and getting better and better every day, more and more people want them. I'll be honest with you, I'm glad they're out there, but living 3 decades or more without cheese, I don't really need cheese. It's a personal thing. But I'm very, very glad that there are more plant-based cheeses made from nuts and seeds and coconut and any other plant you might imagine that can be mixed with some enzymes and grow those probiotics and get cultured and give it a tangy flavor. People want that? Great. And it should be made from plants, not from tortured animals like cows and goats and sheep. So all of that is a good thing. There are products, cleaning products. There are jerkies made from mushroom and other chewy plant foods. So if you have a need to chew on something salty, you can do it with a plant food instead of an animal food. Again, I'm going to say I've never been a jerky fan. I'm not a chewing gum fan. I don't have a need to constantly chew, but maybe some people do. And if you do, isn't it better to choose a product that's made from plants that's cruelty-free? So a lot of exciting things out there in terms of what we can do with plants. I wanted to touch on just a few of them, and then I wanted to go back in time and talk about some history, because believe it or not, when it comes to making things from plants, we're repeating ourselves. Stay tuned for that. I was reading about it, and I'm quite fascinated by what happened before. But I think now in the 21st century, we may be ready for making products out of plants. So the first one I wanted to talk about, I think a little bit about making leather from pineapple. I'm not exactly sure how it's done, but I know there are people out there trying, making pocketbooks and purses and shoes from pineapple. There's a company out there called Scoots. Have you heard of them? They have a Kickstarter, Scoots. And they're making shoes from pineapple, corn, and cork. And they look nice. The prototype they have looks like a loafer, a comfortable shoe. And it, from what I can tell from the pictures, it looks sort of leathery. But it looks very comfortable and very nice. And I'm kind of curious about Scoots. So if you're interested in shoes that are made from plants, this might be a new company to keep an eye on. We were just walking around the Lower East Side a few days ago and stopped into Mooshoes. Mooshoes is a vegan shoe company. They've been around for a long time now. I remember when the founders, Erica and Sarah Kuberski, were just getting started and had the dream of making a vegan shoe company in their eyes. And now they've done so much. And they're even having shoes made in Portugal that are made from Italian products and are made with not just cruelty-free products, but they also make sure that the people that are making these shoes aren't being paid a livable good wage. And, you know, there's a caveat. The shoes are expensive. And most of these new shoes coming out on the market, even the Scoots that have the Kickstarter, I think they're anticipating that their shoe will sell for $75, $85. I think that's what I saw. This isn't Payless. And speaking of Payless, Payless is going out of business. So it's exciting. When it comes to clothing and shoes, not necessarily food, but when it comes to making clothing and shoes from plants, because of supply and demand and because they're relatively new products, we will have to pay more. And that may be hard for some people. I try as best as I can to go for products that are within my ethical philosophy. And so I tend not to buy very much anymore. But maybe we go back to another time where we buy a few items that are made with quality and are costly, but last a long time and support the things that we believe in, rather than buying a lot of stuff that falls apart really quickly and is really cheap. And we have like 10 colors of one thing and 20 of this. And do we really need that? It's just some food for thought as I riff on this new company, Scoots, making pineapple shoes. Okay, another product that really tickled my fancy. Have you heard about this one? There is a vegan fishing lure. Now, this is really clever, and it's very nice because a lot of people who have enjoyed fishing, I think part of what I've understood, I've never gone fishing, but the romantic part, the part we read about, what people have explained to me, what they love about it is the peacefulness, the serenity, the quiet, just being out on a calm water, and then perhaps the excitement of getting a bite. But putting that aside, the idea of being out on a boat in the water or on the beach somewhere, or, you know, sitting off a ledge with the fishing rod in the water, it's a very relaxing, calm image, right? But the reality is that if a fish grabs the bait and they get stuck with the blade in their mouth, the hook, they definitely feel pain. There's no question now. We know that fish feel pain. We know they're sentient. We know that they suffer fear. And once they're hooked, they're wounded. And so for some people who feel that they're going to be compassionate and they're going to release and let the fish back in the ocean, perhaps they're not connecting the dots and realizing that they're putting back a very vulnerable fish back into the water, a fish that's been wounded, a fish that can attract predators. Okay, so let's get back to this exciting vegan fishing lure. It doesn't come with a fishing rod or anything. You can use your old fishing rod or your new fishing rod. And instead of putting the hook in the bait, you put this vegan fishing lure, which has fish food in it. And you can sit out on the water. You can sit in your boat and have the fishing rod dipped in the water and just put some fish food out for any of the fish who might want to come along and visit and get an extra treat from you. And I think that's kind of a sweet thing to do. Vegan fishing lure. And they're cheap. I've seen them on Cool Stuff. And I imagine you can make your own. But it's really a lovely idea, don't you think? The real topic I wanted to get to today for 20th century products. I've talked about this before and I'm going to talk about it again today, and it has to do with beef and meat and burgers. I'm kind of fascinated about the history behind this. All right, so you know already that we have lots of plant-based burgers out on the market, and the ones that are really making a big hit, making all the money, are Beyond Burger and the Impossible Burger. Different hamburger chains are starting to offer them on their menus. You can get them just about anywhere now. And I suppose this is a good thing for people who want to reduce their meat consumption. I personally, you know how I feel, right? You know how I feel. I would just like people to learn how to eat what's good for them, like beans and whole grains and salads and things, and make delicious things from these simple whole foods. That's my wish. But get with it, Karen. That's not where the world is at. The world is at all kinds of manufactured products. That's what people want for convenience and for all kinds of other things that, okay, I don't understand. But wait. There are also companies that aren't making completely plant products. They're making blends. And this is really bizarre to me, but I'll get to the history part of it, which I found fascinating. There's a company started by vegan Paul Shapiro. He was the founder of Compassion Over Killing, and awesome nonprofit organization that does all kinds of investigations and promotes a healthy vegan diet. And then he moved on to the Humane Society. And then he wrote a book called Clean Meat. We had him on the program. We talked to him about clean meat, talking about cultured meat and all of these new meat analogs that are out on the market. And he's come up with the Better Meat Company now, which offers three or four products that meat manufacturers can use to blend with their meat products and sell products that are mixed, that are meat and plant meat together. So if people want to reduce their meat consumption, they can buy these blends that are not 100% meat. Either it's either a blend with beef, a blend with turkey, a blend with chicken. And apparently, there are companies that are interested in having these kinds of products. My first reaction is just the ew reaction. But to me, meat, all meat is ew. But blending it with plant materials, I don't know. It's just ew. How do you feel about blended meats? Is it a good thing? Do you think we're on the right path? Do you think it will really help people reduce their meat consumption if they start to consume products that are not 100% meat, that are normally 100% meat, like sausages and burgers and nuggets and things like that? I don't know. I just know where I'm coming from, and it doesn't sit right with me. I'll support anything that reduces the amount of animals that are harmed on this planet. Anything. So if that's what it's going to do, that's good. I just wish we could get to the finish line a lot sooner and not have to take these shades of gray to get to the ultimate destination, which is eating plants and not animals for so many reasons. And the question is, do we even have time? So you're listening to all these programs on global warming, and we get different predictions as to when things are going to happen and when things are going to become dire. And we've already started to see all kinds of weather changes. And in some locations all over the planet, they are experiencing drastic changes that are affecting life in a negative way. So when is that going to happen? Do we have time? Do we have time to play around with blended meats until we get to a place where we're not destroying the environment by raising plants to feed animals to feed people, and we get more efficient and more sustainable and more mindful? I don't know. I hope we have time. And I'd like to see it all happen sooner than later. So there are these blended products. Now, you may have heard that Tyson, for example, is jumping into the plant-based market, and they've got a chicken nugget now. It's not vegan. It's made with egg. Now, why they couldn't come out with a chicken nugget that's completely vegan, I don't know. I don't know what these people are thinking, because there are companies that have already made chicken nuggets that are completely plant-based, that are completely vegan. Who needs an egg? And then there's the Just company that makes a plant-based egg. So they could have made their chicken nuggets with the plant-based egg and made it all plant-based. I mean, there were so many options, but no. They're keeping up in the 21st century, and they're joining the alternate protein segment with their egg-based nuggets. And they're also making burgers, blended burgers. And those blended burgers are made with isolated pea protein and beef. Now, isolated pea protein, I've mentioned this a few times. There's not a lot of science out there about isolated pea protein. We now have a lot of science about isolated soy protein. And because it is a highly processed food, it's not health promoting. Will we find that out about isolated pea protein? I can't say. But I do like to encourage everyone to eat as much minimally processed food, minimally processed as whole as it can be, rather than eating isolated pea protein in a patty. Eat the peas, plain peas. I love peas. Peas are delicious. Mash them in mashed potatoes. They're yummy. Yeah. Okay, so we have Tyson in the market now. Everybody wants a piece of the plant-based pie. And before I go any further, because I want to get back into history, because this is the most interesting, I've been saying the word plant-based a lot, and I'm working on writing a piece about the meaning of the word plant-based. What does it mean to you? I think I remember hearing about it first in the 80s, the late 80s. It might have been in John Robbins' book, Diet for New America. I'm not quite sure. But I do know that when I started working with Earth Save International, which was founded by John Robbins, we had a lot of material where we use the word vegan and the word plant-based interchangeably. And back then, in my mind, without looking up a definition for what plant-based means, I assumed that it meant vegan, vegan-ish, very close to vegan, meaning it was something that was made with plants and maybe by accident or intentionally somehow a little bit of egg or dairy or some flavoring was in the product, but really minuscule. It wasn't a pure vegan product, but so close. And that's how I took the meaning of plant-based, so that people who didn't want to have a label, people who didn't want to say, I'm vegan, people who didn't want to commit, or people who just aren't comfortable with having an identity like that, they just wanted to eat plants. The word plant-based was gentle. The plant-based was easy, non-committal. and beneficial. So we would use the word plant-based a lot. And over the decades, what's happened with the word plant-based? Plant-based is being used by everybody. So in some ways, those of us who have been pushing plant foods for decades can pat ourselves on the back and say, yeah, we're out there. We're in the mainstream. People are listening. We're making a mark. People are getting it. Plants are healthier. Eat less animals. People want to eat more plants. Keep it plant-based, blah, 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 blah. But is that what's really happening? I get the feeling sometimes, if I'm reviewing, for example, a webinar on paleo diets or ketogenic diets, that the word plant-based kind of creeps in there too. So a lot of people who are promoting diets that include animal products, they acknowledge that eating plants are important. And hey, great, thank you. Eating plants is important. It is healthful. And everybody's realizing that that grandma and mom and everybody, all our parents, were right when they said eat your vegetables. Vegetables are important. So they include the word plant-based a lot in their materials, saying, yeah, you should eat plant-based. And then, you know, your meat should come from humanely sourced, blah, 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 and grass-fed, blah, blah, blah. And they use the word plant-based. And this disturbs me because I feel like the word plant-based has been exploited. Yeah, exploited. And we hear it everywhere. What do you think? What do you think about the word plant-based? What does it mean to you? Does it mean, if you eat a plant-based diet, for example, does that mean 51% of the food you eat is plant-based? What does it mean? It certainly doesn't mean vegan. Not anymore, if it ever did. I'm going to dig a little more into plant-based over time and see what I come up with. I don't know the history. I don't know who the first person was to make the term plant-based. But perhaps I will figure it out at some point. All right. Now to the meat of the program. What I really wanted to talk about was the history of blending plants with meat to make different products. So when I first started hearing about these blended meats with isolated pea protein or even isolated soy protein, or just plant proteins in general to make sausages and burgers, etc., I thought to myself, didn't this happen already? I have a memory of soy being added to beef and making burgers, and it was served in schools. Am I that old? Does anybody remember this? And sure enough, I looked into it. It's not a dream. I wasn't making it up. We're repeating history. This happened already. So I did a little digging. And the history of soy is really fascinating. And there have been some articles written about soy, and Wikipedia does a decent job too. But there were people like Henry Ford, who was really interested in soy products. Now, I'm not going to say that Henry Ford was a good guy or a bad guy. He had some interesting politics that I don't want to get into. But he did do some important things with cars. But he was allegedly a vegetarian and liked looking into the soybean, but not just for food. During the 30s or so, there was a new kind of technology, chemergy, where we were discovering how to industrialize plant foods and make things out of them. Things like wallpaper and glue from peanut shells, and synthetic rubbers from soybeans, and of course, ethanol fuels from corn, as well as barley, sweet potatoes, artichokes, things like that. This was the beginning. And Henry Ford, apparently, had a dream of making a car out of plant foods. Growing cars out of the ground is the quote. And he had this vision of having farm factories where we could grow renewable materials, harvest them, and process them into plastics and rubbers and fuels. And he even made, are you ready for this? Have you heard about this? He made a soybean car. And apparently the chassis was made entirely from a soy-based plastic resin. You can look on Wikipedia. It's there. It's a cute little car. And this is fascinating. And now, in addition to that, there are a lot of companies that are looking now at making their products that are made from petrochemicals, for example. They want to make them from plant plastics, plastics that can be made that are sustainable, where we don't have to dig deep into the ground and pull out all that buried carbon and then ultimately have it go into the atmosphere and warm it. Plastics made from plants can be more sustainable. And scientists, technologists were looking into this like about 90 years ago they started, which is mind-boggling to me. Now, even more so, get back to those burgers that I remember. I remember a soy beef burger. And sure enough, I read about General Mills, and they created a product. It was in the late 60s, early 70s. And they created a product that was made from soy, and they called it Bontré. Bontré. Maybe it was supposed to sound French or Latin. But it wasn't supposed to sound anything like soy. And they made a lot of products from it. So they were able to, I mean, soy is amazing with what you can do with it. So you can extrude it and you can make fibers from it. You can make rubbery things from it. It just, you can do lots of wonderful things and create things from it. And they were discovering this. So General Mills made lots of products. Maybe you remember this one, Bakos. Bakos were introduced in late 1965. And this was a hit, this product. Do you remember Bakos? It used to be on all the salad bars I used to go to in the 70s and early 80s. Who remembers salad bars? There still are some salad bars out there, right? But you can't find Bakos on them. There are other products today that are like Bakos, and I'm not saying that they are necessarily a healthy product. I looked up what the ingredients were in Bakos, and I don't know if this was the old-fashioned Bako or a more current version, but it's a simple product, defatted soy flour, partially hydrogenated soybean oil. Are we allowed to make foods from partially hydrogenated oil still? I thought we weren't supposed to be doing that. Water, sugar, natural and artificial flavors. Don't you love natural flavors? Natural flavors that are not natural at all. Caramel color, red 40, and tocopherol, which is used as a preservative. So that was their first product, and it was a meat analog. But they made a lot of other foods. They what they did was they wanted to use this Bontré soy product as a meat extender and blend it with ground beef. And the idea was to reduce meat cost, but they didn't want to reduce nutritional value. Now, of course, if you're not consuming meat, there are plenty of things that you're not getting, like cholesterol and saturated fat. But they work to keep, I guess, the amount of protein, even though some of it was plant protein, and some other nutrients the same. And they did really well at marketing it to institutions. It wasn't really sold to households. And the National School Lunch Program approved the addition of this textured soy protein to meat dishes. And that's why I remember it, because I used to eat my school lunches, and I remember people saying that there was soy mixed in with our burgers. So this happened long ago, folks. This happened long ago. The thing is, it wasn't popular for a number of reasons. For those who had a memory of wartime, like World War II, there was a memory of rationing and a memory of eating foods to take the place of the meat that people were used to eating. And so that memory wasn't very appealing. And, okay, so it wasn't marketed that way. General Mills tried to market it in a way, and they were really careful with the language because they didn't want to call it an imitation. But they wanted people to know that it was affordable, and it tastes just the same. These products they were making tasted like chicken and ham and beef and et cetera. Yeah, this was 50 years ago. And then somehow we got away from that. I don't know. Why did we get away from it? The thing that breaks my heart is that there were scientists back then who knew about these products and wanted to promote them for a number of reasons. They wanted to promote them because of food insecurity around the world, where there was a shortage of protein in some places. And they also knew that chemical fertilizers and pesticides and growing animals to feed people was not sustainable. And so the idea was we could grow our proteins from plants to feed the world. And anyway, here we are today, 2019, and everybody's starting to talk about climate change and global warming. And General Mills was there years ago with the food for the future made with vegetable protein. Yeah. So nowadays, we have new companies, and they're doing what was done before. But now, some would say they're doing it better. That maybe they put a lot of research into the products, and they taste better. I can't tell you because I'm not tasting any of them today. But I think most of it has to do with a lot of marketing. I believe that people can be marketed to eat just about anything. Something that is nutritious or not nutritious. When you have a great ad campaign, when you have celebrities that are munching on your product with a smile, people will buy it, and people will learn to like it. We can learn to like anything. Hey, I used to eat meat until I was 15 years old, and I liked it. And now, decades later, I gag at the thought of it. The smell, everything to me is repulsive. I don't know that everyone could ever feel that way, but I do. That's my experience. But I do believe that with education and information, one thing can seem more attractive, more nutritious, more delicious than something else. And here we have history showing us that we've done it all before. So I wasn't wrong. And I'm just so amazed with soy and all the things that we can do with soy. And it's so frustrating to me when people say, oh, I can't eat soy. You shouldn't eat soy. Soy is estrogen. Now, if you have a soy allergy, I understand you can't eat it. And that's fine. And nobody has to eat soy. But soy is a pretty amazing food. And the science is overwhelmingly in support of the health benefits of eating whole, minimally processed soy, not the soy protein isolates and the highly manufactured, industrialized soy products. They're not so good. I mentioned a while ago that I was making my own soy milk, and I really need some help. So if anybody's making it, I hope you will send me a note at info@realmeals.org. I've made two attempts. The second attempt was definitely better, but it has a very strong beany flavor. Someone I read described it as paint-like, and I think, yes, the first time I made it where I didn't scoop away enough of the foamy solids, it definitely had a paint-like smell. Yummy, right? But one of the things that I did was I cooked it for a long time the second time, and it got a skin on the top. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. I know that when I was young and I used to drink cow's milk and I would make hot chocolate or something, I'd get a skin on the top and it was gross. But soybean skin is actually used as a food. And I've had it many times in Asian restaurants, vegan Asian restaurants, bean curd skin. It's like crack to me. It's amazingly delicious. So I didn't do it intentionally, but by cooking the soy milk for a while, I created a skin on top, and I was careful. I peeled it off, and I put it down on a plate, and I let it cool. It was the most delicious bean curd skin I ever, ever had. So at some point, I got to take the time and get better at this, because this is worth it. Bean curd skin. Soybeans are pretty amazing. There was another product in 2006. I couldn't really dig much history in it. Maybe you've heard of Solacina. Solacina. I was reading articles in 2006. They were blending beef with soy, but I don't know if they fizzled out or not because I couldn't find any more about them. People have been trying to do this forever. I like to quote my dad here. I haven't used this expression in a long time. If you can't solve the problem, eliminate the problem. And the problem is animal meat. We don't need to be blending. We need to just get rid of it and eat plant foods. So there's other things to think about when we're using plants to make things. I'll give you an example. Corn. Corn is now used as a biofuel. And I remember reading in Tim Wise's book, Eating Tomorrow, about how the corn fuel economy really messed things up for the price of corn, especially corn for food. And in terms of corn, there's competition between corn for food, corn for people food, human people food, corn for animal feed, corn for fuel. And now we're looking at corn for so many other things. As we get away from plastics, there are disposable plastics being made from corn. And, oh, I was just reading, this may not be for corn, but Legos, for example, you know, the plastic Legos, they want to be cool. they are working really, really hard to make a plant plastic for their Legos, and they're failing. They can't get it hard enough to do what Legos do so well, but they're still working on it. But I wonder if we do ultimately move to making all plastics, let's say, from plants, will that indeed be sustainable? And can we do that? Will we have the landmass? Will it be affordable? Will we have more food insecurity because we're making stuff out of plants? I don't want to be all gloom and doom and negative, but everything needs to be considered when new products are introduced, and they never are. If they were, for example, companies would be responsible for the pollution that they create or the products when they're no longer useful, disposing them. These things are never included in the price of a product when we buy them. And now we're having to deal with mountains of waste. Nobody wants to take care of them. Nobody wants responsibility. And we're going to need to have laws that regulate what happens to them and what happens with future products. And I always felt that the companies that make the products should be responsible for everything related to it. End of life, the pollution related in the plot process, all of that should be figured out so that there's zero waste involved. But we don't think about that. But we're going to have to think about that. So I want to think about the landmass required to grow the plants, to make all the things we make today. Because right now we're digging petrochemicals out of the earth. And that's not sustainable. But can we grow enough and keep growing and keep the soil healthy, growing all of these different things that we're going to use to make plastics and cars? You think we'll make soy cars like Henry Ford had foreseen? That could be really fun. Yeah. So lots of exciting things are happening with plants. And I'm excited about the people today, especially the young people that are coming out of college and have an idea, passionate about a product that they can make that's sustainable and useful. I wonder if I was graduating from college today and jumping out into the world, what it is that I would like to do. I think it would be very different than when I was going to college. I didn't know anything when I came out of college. I became a chemical engineer. I didn't know what that was. And it's like hysterical nowadays that that's what I chose, because that was a major polluting field. And I wasn't interested in polluting. I just like chemistry. But there are lots of wonderful things that we can do with chemical engineering and the right raw materials. And those raw materials will more and more be plants. Yay! There you go. Okay. I wanted to just take a moment. I'm breathing now before I bring this subject up, but I just have to make a mention. Less than a couple of weeks ago, we lost two people in the vegan movement. Oddly, they were both 52 years old. One was Doug Green. I don't know how many people knew Doug Green, but in New York, he was like at every vegan event for decades. And if it had food, he'd be there. He was a major foodie, great volunteer, and a nice guy. And he had a very tragic death where he was run over by a subway car. And no one really knows what happened. It was not suicide or anything. It he may have fallen asleep or something and fell over. But it's quite sad. And I just want to say his name, Doug Green. We miss you. Thanks for everything that you did for the planet. And the other person we lost was Mary Max. And maybe you heard about Mary Max. She was the wife of Peter Max. And she worked with many people in the vegan movement to accomplish their products and their events and their dreams and their programs. She was a great speaker and a wonderful animal activist. And she did commit suicide, so that was especially sad. And I just want to take a moment and remember them. Really good people. Yeah, that's life, right? No one gets out of this world alive. But I would like everyone to have a nice, long life feeling good, a good quality life. And that's why I talk about eating healthy food all the time. But there are other issues, obviously. And food cannot solve all problems, but a lot of them. Absolutely a lot of them. So in the last 10 minutes, let's talk about some fun stuff. Food. Food that I love to eat and food that I've eaten. I'm working on a recipe for Japanese silk pancakes. I'm not working on them. I made the recipe. I read about an article in the New York Times back in April, I think. And it was talking about these Japanese silk pancakes, that they're the rage at a number of restaurants. Everybody's loving them, and they had a recipe for them. So if you've seen them, they're puffy. They're like an inch and a half high, maybe 3 inches round. And they're made with lots of egg whites, of course. It's an egg thing. And wheat flour. And when I read the article, I thought, okay, I want to make them. And I want to make them gluten-free and vegan, right? Better living through chemistry. And I just made my first recipe, just made it up. And I didn't have the molds. And I didn't even know that I needed a mold. But there are these molds that you can put on a frying pan and pour your batter in, and it will keep the shape. You may have seen them used for sunny side up eggs, you know, when you get them perfectly round in a restaurant, or maybe one of your friends or someone, or maybe you've done it yourself. But you can pour the egg right in this mold, and it will keep the round shape. I didn't even know I needed that. I just made this recipe using, drumroll, aquafaba. Aquafaba, which is bean water, that thick, mysterious liquid that you find in a can of chickpeas that you always throw down the sink. Don't throw it away. Freeze it. And save it for later when you want to make lemon meringue pie or Japanese silk pancakes. That's what I do. This is amazing stuff, this aquafaba. You put it in a stand mixer and you just let it go, and it whips up into meringue. Yeah, it does. Try it. It's really fun. Anyway, I made this recipe. I made it with all-purpose gluten-free flour, garbanzo bean flour, and the aquafaba. Not much else. And I made the pancakes, and they were amazing. They were silky and light and lovely. And just this weekend, I bought the molds. And I bought three shapes, a little ring, a bigger ring, and a rectangle. And I can't wait to make them and then share the recipe with you. It's going to be fun. Because we can make everything from plants, and we don't need animals. Not even for Japanese silk pancakes. No, we don't. And we can make them gluten-free, too, for those who cannot consume gluten. Because we live in this crazy world where more and more people have different kinds of food allergies and things. The plant kingdom is vast, and there are many plants that can accomplish the same end goal. I love plants. Yeah, so look for Japanese silk pancakes coming soon to responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's where I live, my nonprofit organization that offers everything for free. Yeah. So my daily blog, What Vegans Eat, is now on day 1,587. Have you been there? I invite you to go there when you can. I think it's fun. We went to a number of different restaurants this week, and I include them, of course, in my blog. Urban Kitchen is owned by the Blossom people, if you're familiar with the restaurants in New York. And we went to hear a live radio show program. I was really curious about this. Brian Lehrer, he is the host on WNYC. And I listened to him from time to time, and he advertised that he was doing a live show in the Green Space, which is a great venue in Manhattan, and that Queens residents could use a particular code and get free tickets to the event. Well, I'm a Queens resident, and they were offering free tickets because they were having a debate of all of the candidates for the upcoming election in Queens for our district attorney. And I thought that would be a fun thing to do because I wanted to see a live radio show in action. I mean, I know what we do at the Progressive Radio Network. I know what I do with my podcast, but I wanted to see what WNYC did. And it was really fun. And then after the program, we went to Urban Kitchen. And Urban Kitchen, if you're careful, you can eat healthy. I think they have one dish that's pretty clean, but most of it is comfort food and decadent. And we did a little comfort food eating. Gary got a gorgeous French toast, and I got the tofu scramble with the English muffin and a mushroom sausage that was yummy. And if you want to see what those look like, you'll have to check out What Vegans Eat Day 1583, 1583 at responsibleeatingandliving.com. That was really good, good eating. Another thing I did recently when I was in Houston, I really love purple potatoes. Okay, you know, I'm nuts over purple potatoes. Purple sweet potatoes and purple potatoes, both of them, and they're not the same. Now, I can only find purple sweet potatoes at Whole Foods, and I haven't been able to find organic purple potatoes. If you know where to find them, let me know, because purple potatoes and purple sweet potatoes are not the same. Can you say that together quickly? Purple potatoes and purple sweet potatoes. The purple potato is great for purple potato salad. Purple sweet potatoes, too mushy. But I had purple sweet potatoes, and I needed to make something that would travel well. And I didn't have a lot of ingredients, but I made a purple sweet potato salad, just like I would make a purple potato salad with onions and celery. I used a little tahini instead of mayonnaise. It was really tasty, but really mushy. So if you have a lead on organic purple potatoes, let me know. Because there's nothing like purple potato salad. And summer's coming up. We have a recipe for purple potato salad. Actually, it's not the mayonnaise-y kind. It's more the German kind with that tart vinegary flavor. Love it. But I need a firm purple potato. Or I might have to just bite the bullet and get what we call poisoned purple potatoes, which is purple potatoes that are not organic and are grown with pesticides and or herbicides. Anyway, I'll leave you with that thought. Purple potato salad this summer coming to you. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed today's program and learning about blended meat as much as I did. Blended meat, if you know what I mean. Here's to what soybeans can do. They are super amazing. And to purple potatoes. And, you know, check out those fishing lures that are vegan. That could be fun for a kid, right? And a big kid. Thank you for joining me today. You can find me at info@realmeals.org. I'd really like to hear from you sometime. And that's all I got for you today, everybody. Have a delicious week.